This is Access Radio Chicago, AM 750 WNDZ, Portage, Indiana, Chicago.
The views, opinions, and beliefs expressed on this radio program by the hosts, co-hosts, guests, and or callers do not necessarily reflect those of this radio station and its ownership. The following program, Golfers on Golf, is paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.
Welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio, hosted by Ed Stevenson, Rory Spears, and Len Zien.
All right, it is 9 o'clock. We're on the tee with Golfers on Golf Radio. Good morning. I'm Rory Spears, flying solo today in studio. Ed Stevenson has the week off. But joining me from the beautiful Top of the World Golf Studios in Ocala, Florida, sunny and warm, I'm guessing, already by now, is Len Zien. Lenny, how are you this morning?
You are right. It is really steamy here where the local forecast. I'm a big believer that we're into climate change because I think that everything seems to start in Florida. Every one of the nearby towns on the weather reports, they're very dire weather reports, but the temperature by noon is going to be over 100 in most every town around here. I'm glad I got out of the house and took a brief walk this morning because I don't think it's a day to exercise outside at all. Although that said, we played golf last week and the temperature was 102 in the afternoon and it really wasn't all that bad. There was a breeze blowing, and we were happy to get out there. But I hope it's better in Chicago.
Well, the temperatures haven't been too bad, but, on Thursday especially, about midday, the winds picked up so bad. They were up to about 40, and, I don't even know how the pins stayed in the holes over at Heritage Oaks where I was at, and yesterday, a little windy again out at the golf courses. Not as bad as it was on Thursday, but there was people out there. We had some people showed up at Heritage Oaks on Thursday, walked to the first tee, and before they took their first golf swing, put their driver back in the bag and walked in and said, "Now I'll take my rain check. I'm going home." So it was really blowing, and that happens in some places of the world. They'll say you take those Scotland, Ireland trips, you got to be prepared for the rain, you got to be prepared for the wind. And every once in a while, we see it out on the various tours. And this week, Lenny, our PGA Tour is in Muirfield Village, Dublin, Ohio, I believe. But Jack's event is there, and there's been some interesting news out of there. Have you been following it?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what the news is that you pointed out. I was more interested in what I heard about the LIV Tour today, but Jack Nicklaus was I was a little disappointed. Jack Nicklaus in the pre-tournament press conference didn't want to get involved in much at all. He was questioned strongly about what his feelings were of the state of golf, and if anybody should have good thoughts, it'd be him. But why don't you give me an update? That was the thing that I've taken away from the memorial so far.
Well, the Jack Nicklaus press conference was one of the things that some of the media jumped on was Jack's disappointment with his dates. And basically sending a shot over the bow of the PGA Tour that he wants his dates back. And you know what? Who can blame him? But, he said, "Why would I schedule my own tournament for a week that I normally wouldn't have played when I was on tour?" Yeah. The week before the U.S. Open, Jack always took it off to get ready for the major. And his tournament got moved into the week before the U.S. Open, and he's less than pleased.
Yeah, and this comes on the heels of his other tournament, the Honda Classic in Florida. That went on for over 20 years, and was always getting just terrible dates as the leading first event on the Florida Tour. Players weren't showing up, weren't playing there, even though even the ones that lived right in Jupiter weren't playing there. And so they wound up getting a new sponsor this year, and it's the Cognizant Classic. But you know, it does seem like the player of the legendary status that he should be getting accommodated a bit better from the tour that he played on so well for so long.
Well, Len, you know, you and I remember we talked a couple years ago. We were a little concerned about what was going to happen to Arnold Palmer's Bay Hill Classic since Arnie passed away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was some talk, would it be a better fall event and all sorts of things. But yet the Arnold Palmer seems to have survived all of these changes in golf much better than the Memorial has up at Jack's Place.
Well, I think that, you know, the Bay Hill tournament, it got some special treatment. There's no question about that. They certainly didn't want a tournament that had Arnold Palmer's name on it, you know, to suffer or to eventually fold. But it wasn't the tournament that, you know, the Memorial was for sure. But it did get special treatment. It got it always had better dates. And, you know, I think a little favoritism was shown there. I certainly wouldn't begrudge, you know, fine memories of Arnold Palmer, but I would, it doesn't seem like the Nicklaus tournaments and the Palmer tournaments have been, there's been a bit inconsistency between the two there on the part of the PGA Tour, which is, you know, they can make a lot of decisions to make tournaments better and better or worse for that matter. And I find this one kind of interesting that the Jack's tournaments have not gotten the same kind of special treatment than the one that Arnold puts on.
Yeah, that is true. Well, Lenny, and I know we'll touch back on this as we get through the back nine of the show, but U.S. Open week is coming in just a couple of days at obviously, the home of American Golf, Pinehurst, and I know I'm really looking forward to it. I played number two earlier this year, and I think the pros are going to have their work cut out for them. And people think, well, there's not really a lot of water, and, you know, the trees are pushed back, the fairways are kind of wide, but I still think it's going to be an adventure.
I'm doing well.
Yeah, I was at the two U.S. Opens played there, the one in 99 and one by Payne Stewart, and the one in 2005, won by Michael
Campbell.
We forgot about
Michael Campbell.
And you know, they were the course. I don't think the course. I don't think they. I heard the same kind of thinking that the pros would tear this place up, and I didn't feel they did in either case. But this is going to be a huge week there in Pinehurst. I mean, they're unveiling the new Hall of Fame. They've got another course that just opened. I think it's going to be a little lot different atmosphere, a bigger, better atmosphere. It was always good atmosphere in Pinehurst, but I think it's going to be something special this next week.
Well, I'm sure it will be. And Lenny, one in place for you and I that's always something special is the Misswood Golf Club out in Romeoville on Renwick Road. And we are thrilled to have joining us here this morning their director of golf, Andy Michelson. Andy, how are you this morning?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Andy, we're doing good, and I know that golf season is really heating up, and I'm sure that Mistwood is pretty much packed, definitely on the weekends, but I'm guessing pretty much during the week as well with everything that seems to be happening out there.
Yeah, it's been a really strong spring. I think for everybody, we used to celebrate the days of 200 rounds, you know, once in a blue moon, and it seems like that's every single day. I think we got about 240 players on the books for today. So, golf's alive and well for sure.
Well, Andy, start with bringing our listeners up to speed. I know that the bunkers out there have been kind of getting tinkered with a little bit by your maintenance crew. And is it all of them, or is it the sod wall ones that architect Ray Hearn put in? And what's all happening with that, and how is it changing play out at Mistwood?
Yeah, it's kind of been a focus over the last couple of years. I mean, they're huge projects, right? So, like, the amount of sod it's artificial sod that we're using in order to build up those edges for long-term sustainability. These are with the artificial turf, we're able to kind of guarantee the way that the bunkers look and play for essentially the next 40 or 50 years, instead of the old traditional sidewall bunkers, which, you know, tend to denigrate after about 8 or 10 years. So it's a project that we're doing over the next couple of years. It's a thing that we're doing in the off season to try and not interrupt play, because we are so busy during the year. So it's an ongoing thing. You know, one of the big changes we made in the short term, just kind of you know, to adapt to the growth that we're having in club fitting and teaching and just in general, is you know, we added a whole new practice space to the Performance Center, so golfers can, you know, when they're playing golf, they come right up to the Performance Center, they're able to hit balls and then head right to the first tee. It's kind of a little bit better experience. But we also expanded the amount of room that we have for teaching, and then we also have doubled the size of you know, our footprint for club fitting as well. So we're kind of really bullish on where the golf market's still going. Yeah, we're still seeing signs of growth here at Mistwood.
Yeah, Andy, I've got to ask you, one of the things that I saw online was you guys were out pouring concrete and extending the tee line. And, you know, Mistwood, I don't think, is the only course that is starting to look at how they can find a few more space, a few more yards to widen the tee line, so every once in a while you don't look out there and see 6-7 people with a large bucket of balls in their hand looking for a place to hit. So I think that lengthening the range there probably is doing Mistwood very good. And probably if you've got any hints on how to do it, I think there's other clubs out there that are maybe studying what you're doing, because they all could use the same amount of help.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't blessed with a whole lot of space down there, unfortunately. We're pretty much landlocked with the footprint that we have. So we had really just maximize the space that we did have. And again, it was just kind of one of those aha moments where it's like we have this, you know, essentially 75 feet or so that we weren't using, and needed to create some additional space for teaching and club fitting. So that space is designated just for kind of, our hope is it's just for the golfers that are playing golf during that day, and then some people that want to come in and practice, and that allows us to be able to, you know, run efficiently with the other parts of the department as well.
912, Golfers on Golf Radio. I'm Rory Spears in studio. Len Zeem is with us down at the Top of the World Golf Studios in a beautiful Ocala, Florida. And Lenny, jump in here. What have you got for Andy Michelson, our guest from Mistwood?
Hey, Andy, I did want to take you away from Mistwood for a minute here to talk about your role with the section, with the Illinois section. I was, you had alerted me to it way back when, but the I find it really that you have a new tournament, a new event on your tournament schedule for the local club pros. It's a team competition that even to me it smacks very much of what they're doing on the Live Tour. And I personally thought it was a great idea. I hope that I noticed I saw the first standings on the Illinois PGA website this week. And I hope it's. I think it really adds an interesting twist to what we've seen on the, you know, the regular tournaments for year after year. I hope it's working out that way. Can you give me an update on that?
Yeah, it's turned out to be pretty cool. I mean, it's we didn't get the idea necessarily from Liv. It's something that we tried 5 or 6 years ago, and really didn't really have a good plan behind it. I can't even remember what it was. I think it was like which team makes the most amount of birdies or something like that, and not as many people are participating. But this time around, our tournament committee got together in the off season and was just trying to find kind of new ways to engage. I think what I really enjoy about the, you know, being part of the section and being part of, you know, specifically chairing the tournament committee is the fact that we're always not necessarily changing things, but we're thinking of new ideas. So, yeah, the team golf concept is has really been I think a home run, it's basically all it is, just make, you know, shooting, you know, best ball numbers between the team, and it's everything's really close. It's kind of cool the way it's shaken out the first couple of events. So
good,
Lenny.
Good.
Lenny, anything else for Andy?
Well, you know, I this is something really. It's a subject more for next week, but I don't know. I don't know if Rory does. Andy Svoboda has been really an early season sensation from the results and everything, and I've been doing a little homework on him. He's quite a player, and he's going to play. He's played in six U.S. Opens already. Can you shed much about Andy? We haven't really got a chance to chat with him.
Yeah, I mean he gave me a whooping in match play, so that's about all I can say about that. But no, he's a good player. I always like, you know, it's always nice to have good players come into the section, and you know, from a personality standpoint, I don't know too much about him, but you know, it's kind of the golfer that Butler was looking for, so it's a good fit for them. You know, I know that particular position that they were trying to fill is somebody that's playing golf and entertaining members and entertaining guests of members on a pretty regular basis, as well as giving lessons. So he definitely fits the criteria. I tend to think that some of the better teachers/coaches are the ones with experience. So they've got a good one over there at Butler. And, yeah, I think you'll like it here, obviously. The golf market in Chicago is awesome. People are awesome. You can't have a much better facility than the Butler National. So I'm sure he's probably going to be around for a little while.
Well, Andy, I got to ask you, now that I'm spending a lot of my days working out around a driving range and watching the Illinois PGA Section match play champion Travis Johns work with students every day. You know, we asked him about his win there, and he said it was a matter of the fitter there over at Medina dropping him into a smaller putter. And when you've got a guy as tall as Travis is, I know he's over 6 feet tall, dropping down from a 35 to a 33-inch putter, and he said it just let his hands hang down a little more straight in a natural position. And it sounds like a weird fit for a taller player, but as a facility like Mistwood that does so much club fitting, how does that all come together and, you know, let somebody sort of catch lightning in a bottle and go off and win the championship the way he did? And I heard he made plenty of big putts in way to the title.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's essentially it, right? Your story right there is exactly what club fitting is all about, is the fact that not everybody is the same fit. I mean, when you go in our facility or you go in Medina's facility, you'll see thousands of different options as far as club heads and shafts go when you put those combinations together. So, yeah, it's, you know, people's golf swings are like snowflakes. Everyone's different, right? So you don't just walk into a shoe store and go, hey, I want a Nike shoe. You say, I want the Nike Air Jordans size 10 with this type of fit. And so it's kind of that essential experience that's really, you know, it's become such a massive thing in golf right now. I mean, you know, we do it differently. We do it at a very high level. Medina does it at a high level. There are some of these kind of more quicker fitting operations, I would say, in the big box stores, but still essentially everybody. It's not like the old days, you know, where I used to just walk into, you know, Payless Golf as a kid and go grab a club and then bring it to the register and leave, right? Now you're you know, you're getting fit in some capacity or analyzing in some capacity before that purchase is made. And it's good for everybody. It's good for, you know, the place you bought her from, that you had a good experience in getting fit. It's good for the club manufacturers that they know that their product's being sold in a place where they're really focused on doing it right, like we are. And so, you know, it's really good for everybody. Everybody wins in that situation.
Andy, I know the Performance Center at Mistwood is quite a place, and I know that you and the team out there of, you know, all the guys have been a part of that over the years, you know, from Eric to Chris at the time to Matt. And, you know, and I know you've got another new addition to the team as well. I'll let you tell us a little bit about him. But it seems like you guys keep tweaking it out there. And I know that more and more people, when they want to get fit, and it's not just a summer thing or just a winter thing, but more and more people seem to be looking at club fitting as a year-round prospect, regardless of the season. Or sometimes they do it when they can find a better deal. Sometimes they, at some point in the golf season, just get fed up with their clubs and say, you know what, I've had these far too long. It's time to make a change.
Yeah, I mean, first off, your first point, yeah, we had Scott Hogan, who's a local guy. He's been awesome. Really, really great addition. Added just a lot of organization to our operation. I mean, the size and scope of what we're doing now on a 12-month period on a monthly basis, you know, when you factor in all the communication with the customers that has to happen, all the inventory we have to manage, and just all the things that go along outside of just the club fitting experience. Scott was a huge need, and he's been a really good benefit to what we're doing. What was the second part of your question?
Just overall talking about the constant improvements you've made to the club fitting at the Performance Center. And, of course, with Misswood, it's not just a summer project. It's a winter project with you guys due to the fact that you just pack up and you move that operation over to the next community in Bolingbrook and set up indoor fitting season over at the Misswood Golf Dome in Bolingbrook.
Right, yeah. I mean, all the things that we have, you know, when we fit with TrackMan and all the tools that we have, we just basically, you're right, just pack up and go over to the dome. So our customer is attuned, I think, to the fact that we're a 12-month golf experience. We're one of the few that I can think of that's a full 12-month golf experience. Yeah, we don't really see the seasonality flows. You see seasonality flows in the types of clubs that are being bought, but maybe, but definitely not just in the full scope. You know, this time of year, you know, like Titleist has a new driver coming out in the next month. We'll see a bump from that. We'll see bumps from drivers, for instance, early in the year when traditionally companies like Callaway and TaylorMade come out with new drivers. And then irons are a really consistent part of fitting in the spring and into the summer. You know, as people get outside, you know, it's kind of interesting, but like in the spring when people don't think they're maybe hitting it as far, they start searching, right? They start searching golf ball. They start looking at their set of irons. Maybe I need a new set of irons. And then in the summer, you know, obviously wedges are a huge thing. I mean, people don't switch their wedges out enough. It's crazy. If I think the old tried and true standard that Titleist put out there with Vokey was, hey, if you need to regrip your wedge, it's time for a new wedge. And basically nobody actually abides by that. But we are seeing, kind of as we educate the customer more and better, and the companies start educating the customer, they're changing out wedges more and more. So we see the seasonality within the product. We don't necessarily see the seasonality in the fitting department. It's a strong 12-month operation.
Well, Andy, I got to ask you. You know, that was the advice I got last summer from our good friend at Callaway, Billy Trimble. I had him take a look at my wedges, and I said, "This is the oldest part of my bag. Is it time for them to go?" And he took a look at them, took a couple practice swings with them, and said, "Rory, switch out the grips. You don't need to get rid of the wedges yet, but you definitely need some new grips." And I put some new grips on it, and I did get some better performance. So I found that to be pretty sound advice on the way to move forward. And, you know, Andy, I was celebrating last week. Billy Trimble dropped off my brand new putter for me over at work. And the one that Matt Carter helped me get fit for on your demo day in February at the Dome is here. And I'm looking forward to getting on the course and using it. But, you know, how important are the demo days? You know, we had one at Medina not long ago, and 12 companies were set up on our range, and a big portion of the membership was out there for 5 hours, you know, hitting and testing clubs. And so you see it firsthand, you know, how important is it these days when companies really come in, and if anybody is either looking to make a change or really has a curiosity about a certain brand, it seems like that's the day to do it.
Yeah, I mean, the demo day model's still a part of golf. I wouldn't say it's necessarily a part of club fitting, but it definitely is a part of golf. I think, you know, we're evolving maybe out of those demo days a little bit into individual fitting experiences where, you know, those can take for a full bag sometimes up to 2 to 3 hours. But demo day is definitely a chance for somebody to hit something, maybe get like a quick fit, and be on their way, you know, in 20 or 30 minutes. So there's still a market for that. There's still a need for that. You know, we see that with like launch of products when we're talking about, you know, scalability of being able to service a bunch of customers. You know, we have some demo day events, you know, this summer that'll center around, you know, TaylorMade, Callaway and Titleist primarily, but, and those fitting events are more for, again, scalability. We can see 12, 15, you know, 20 customers in a day where we can only do about 2 or 3 really good fittings in a day. So it all just kind of depends on the experience that you're looking for. But, you know, the equipment's so good from so many companies now that what you grab is usually going to be better than what you had before. So that's the fortunate side of our side of business.
Well, Andy, before Lenny and I let you go today, and I know I'm curious, and I'm sure he is too, give us the insight about this year's Phil Kozin Illinois Women's Open. The dates, is the defending champion back? What can you tell us?
I don't have the list right in front of me if the defending champion is coming back. We're the 22nd, 23rd of July. We have a strong start to sign up for sure. We're probably in a better spot than we've been in the last 5 years for sign up. So, it's important, right? It's an important part of Illinois golf is maintaining this championship and making sure that it's run as well as we possibly can. I know that, you know, adding the IPGA's stamp on it has helped just from a marketing standpoint. Locally, I feel like that's been really strong. And then just the branding execution, it's important, you know, to me as part of the Illinois PGA and Miss Wood is together that, you know, the championship really gets its credit being kind of underneath the stamp of the Illinois PGA as well. So, we're you know, a proud supporter of it and just going to keep going with it. We're here to support it in any way that we possibly can, and as always, we're just hoping on the biggest and best field we can possibly get. So.
Andy, any thoughts, anything happening, looking at hosting any other tournaments over the next couple of years in addition to the IWL?
We always try and target kind of one event every single year outside of maybe the Women's Open or maybe even the Women's Open is that big event for the year. Really don't have anything big on the calendar besides the Women's Open this year here. Part of that is just kind of, you know, for us, we're trying to kind of sit back and understand exactly what's happening in this golf market because it's going crazy and it's a real challenge. It'd be a real challenge to, you know, shut down for a week, for instance, for State Am right now at this point. And those are the same challenges that, you know, we face when we're trying to schedule for the Illinois PGA as well, for instance. And I know the CDGA has their challenges scheduling events as well. So, we want to be we're good stewards, good partners of both CDGA and IPGA. We're here. What we've added to the calendar every single year is we do kick off the Illinois PGA season with the Pro here, which is a really well-attended event. We get over 100 club pros from around the section to participate here. So that's a big one on our calendar. It's early in April, but, you know, we always look forward to that kicking off the season. But, yeah, our eyes and ears are open. We're never going to say no. I would say what I'm excited about from the Illinois PGA side is, you know, adding back in Pro Junior, which is going to be, I believe, on the 19th, I want to say, of June. So that's coming up. And then, you know, we've had a number of pros throughout the section talk about we need to have a day where, you know, the pros and the veterans play together. So we're actually adding an event called the Pro Veteran at Cantini on October 10th. So I think that could be a really, really cool experience for both the professionals and the veterans. And this PGA Hope is going to be a really strong supporter of that event. So it'll be a really cool day for them, probably something that they'll never forget, and we'll never forget, too. So really cool connection there. So that's what I'm excited about coming up. And, I feel like we're going to have a good, strong golf season, even though it was a little bit of a wet spring. It really hasn't pushed anybody away. It seems like whenever it's not raining, people are ready to come out and play golf.
Hey, Andy, I should mention, just realized after looking at the release this morning, do you want to get in a little early trash talking? I think you're probably a part of that professional team going up against those amateurs at Oak Park in the Radix Cup.
Yeah, we got the Radix Cup coming up next week, right? We've gotten our butts whooped the last couple of times, so we're needing to play better. We got a really strong team this year. We have a strong team every year. They have a strong team every year, so. I think it's gonna be a really good competition. It's good every single match. I mean, there's definitely no slouches in this competition. So, excited to play Oak Park. Oak Park is a special place. It's absolutely perfect condition always, and it's just good strong competition. And then at the end of it, we usually share a beer with each other. So it's not life or death. It's always just a good spirited competition.
All right. Well, Andy Michelson, director at Golf Misswood Golf Club in Romeoville. Hey, thanks for jumping in with Len Zeman and myself this morning, and we'll look forward to seeing you out at Misswood one of these days to play some golf.
Yeah, guys, thanks for everything you do for golf in Chicago.
Yeah, appreciate it. All right, we are going to take our first break, and Lenny and I will be back with Greg Wood, the director of operations for several courses in the Carolina area, including the Mike Strand's design Tot Hill Farm, right after this.
The Misswood Golf Club, located at 1700 West Renwick Road in Romeoville, is one of the Chicago area's top public golf courses. This Ray Hearn design is a links-style course complete with Scottish-Irish-styled sidewall bunkers. Each year, Misswood plays home to the Phil Kozen Illinois Women's Open and has hosted other golf championships, including the Illinois State Amateur and the Women's Western Golf Association National Amateur Championship. This year, Misswood has built an extension onto the driving range to hold even more golfers at one time. The Performance Center is constantly being updated with the latest in golf technology for club fittings and lessons. Misswood has one of the largest staffs of Illinois PGA teaching professionals at any club. So come on out and enjoy Misswood. Challenge your game through the holes of Kelpie's Corner. And after the round, enjoy the food and beverage of McWethy's Tavern in the clubhouse. For more information, call 815-254-3333 or visit mistwoodgc.com.
DuPage Golf has reinvented the nature of golf in Chicagoland. After extensive renovations, the Preserve at Oak Meadows is reborn as a new, award-winning 18-hole golf course, practice facility, and environmental haven. The reviews are in. The Preserve at Oak Meadows joins the ranks of top courses in the country on Golf Week's Best You Can playlist and is the winner of Golf Digest's Green Star Award and Golf Inc.'s Renovation of the Year. Visit DuPageGolf.com to book a tee time. Learn more about the Preserve at Oak Meadows at DuPageGolf.com.
The Erin Hills Golf Club in Erin, Wisconsin is your home for golf on a true championship golf course. In 2017, Erin Hills hosted the U.S. Open, but next year the U.S. Open will return with the ladies getting the opportunity. This time, the women's 2025 U.S. Open will be Erin Hills' fifth USGA championship. So why not come out and play the two-time U.S. Open course before the women arrive in 25? Erin Hills has now opened the 63,000-square-foot Drumlin putting green for those players with a tee time or staying overnight. Yes, the Drumlin has lights, so night golf is an option. If you arrive at Erin Hills later in the day and daylight is fading, why not try the Kettle 5-hole loop, which is comprised of holes 1 through 5 on the main Erin Hills golf course? Food and beverage? as some of Wisconsin's finest choices, including the in-house Fescue Rescue, a popular choice of Erin Hills golfers. Overnight accommodations both in the lodge and the cottages are filling up quickly. So make your tee times and book your play-in stays at erinhills.com or call Erin Hills at 866-772-4769.
All right, it is 9:35. You're listening to Golfers on Golf Radio. Rory Spears in the studio with you this morning. Ed Stevenson has the week off. Len Zeem joining us from the Top of the World Studios down in Ocala, Florida. And Lenny, I'm thrilled to welcome our next guest to the program this morning. He is the Director of Golf Operations for several courses, including one that I'm sure is really busy this week because it's in the vicinity of the U.S. Open at Pinehurst, just down the street a few miles. That would be the Mike Strawn's designed Tothill Farm. And Len, one of the courses I really enjoyed having a chance to play and see, didn't know anything about it, and was real pleased that the club's director of marketing, Robbie Wooten, took the time to challenge us to come out and play. But Robbie, if in fact, is out playing golf this morning, so he's turned it over to the boss. Greg Wood, welcome to Golfers on Golf Radio. It's great to have you.
Good morning, Rory. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. It's funny, you start listening to social media and you see people saying, hey, I'm going to the Open. Anybody got recommendations of where I can play in the area? And Tothill Farm is not too far down the road. And you know what? I got to believe your tee sheet's pretty full up this week.
It is. We still have some openings available. But yes, the Open has definitely brought a lot of interest in Tothill Farm, especially with all the social media we've had out last year. And we're really excited about the upcoming week.
Well, Robbie, I know that, while Tothill Farm has been around for a while, the ownership group Greg, that you're a part of, has came in last year and closed the course down for a while and fixed it up. And, you know, as the first time I was out there, unfortunately, it was a little cold on my drive down to Florida, and the superintendent left tarps on the green. He must have known I was coming. But, it was fantastic just to get in a cart and drive around and look at the property and the golf hole parts that weren't covered up. So tell us a little bit about Tothill Farm, the improvements that were made, and why it's a rising star and ending up on people's bucket lists all over the country.
Well, Mike Strantz is the golf course architect, and he started work on Tothill Farm in 1998 and completed it in 2000. In 1998, Mike was voted Golf Course Architect of the Year, and then in 2000, he was inducted as one of the greatest golf course architects of all time. So when he did Tothill Farm, he was at the top of his game, and in multiple interviews, Mike's mentioned that this golf course was some of the best property he ever got to work with. Mr. Barber purchased the golf course, we had access to video and still pictures of the original golf course itself, and our whole goal was to try to restore it back to the way Mike had it as best we could. And it's just a naturally beautiful golf course. It has Uri National Forest off to your left, and you have about 250 feet of elevation change that Mike really did a great job in creating some beautiful golf holes.
Lenny, what have you got for Greg Wood, the Director of Operations at Tothill Farms?
Yeah, Craig, I tell you, I can't help but one, this is kind of just not exactly a question answer, but you think about the great courses that Mike Strange did, and it's such a shame he didn't do that many. But I mean, I played Caledonia, True Blue, Tobacco Road, Royal New Kent. All these are such great courses, and his life was just too short. I mean, it's amazing. What I haven't played Tothill Farms, but I want to. But it's amazing just what he could have done with a little better break on the life side. I'm sure that you're aware of all his background, and He's almost not a forgotten guy in golf architecture by any means, but he was so talented. Just it's amazing what might have come out from his pen down the road.
Yes, yes. First of all, you need to come play Tot Hill, and secondly, I agree completely. I mean, a guy with the background as a commercial artist. Also had a background in turf, and then he spent, you know, his entire life moving dirt, you know, and designing golf courses. One of the things about Tot Hill that makes it special is in numerous interviews with Mike, he mentioned how Tot Hill was one of the best pieces of property they ever got to work with. And we have five par fives and five par threes that makes it unique. And I challenge you, it'll be five of the best par threes you've ever played in your life. They're just stunningly beautiful, and the yardages, you have enough variety in yardages, but they're mainly shorter par threes, which people seem to really enjoy. But yes, I agree with you. I mean, I really feel that Mike was the beginning of what we see in a lot of golf course architecture today. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. the wider mm-hmm. fairways, choosing the corridors, and then having the challenging second shot, you know, how much do you want to chew off? Do you want your adrenaline rush, or do you want to play for a safe par bogey? And I think you get a lot of that at Tot Hill Farm.
Mm-hmm. How far are you actually from Pinehurst? I was born in North Carolina, and my daughter lives in Wilmington, so I get in that neck of the woods once in a while. But how far are you actually from Pinehurst? Rory brought that up earlier.
Great question. We're a 50-minute drive north. But we're right off of 73-74, which is a main corridor for a lot of people, either going to Myrtle Beach or the Pinehurst area. It's a great way to catch us either at the beginning of your trip on the way in or on the way out. And we've had a lot of visitors choose that course of action along the way.
Well, Greg, I got
to have another one soon.
Greg, I got to tell you, you know, sometimes you get off an interstate to find some of these destination properties, and once you jump off the main road, it can be a little difficult. And I think some clubs just hope people can dial something up on their phone and figure it out. But I got to admit, the job that your team has done in just guiding people from the interstate right to the front gates of the club is absolutely outstanding. It's well marked, and if anybody's got a rental car and doesn't really know the area, it's a very easy drive from Pinehurst, and the signs will guide you all the way to the gates, and it's real easy to find and get there. And Greg, I think that's important for anybody looking for a club they don't normally play.
Yes, I agree with you, Rory. And I think one of the coolest things is you'll see the 17th green when you first come in in your drive up the Tot Hill Farm, but it'll guide you right to our clubhouse, which is an old farmhouse, white farmhouse, that we converted into the clubhouse. It dates back to the 1840s. And, yeah, it points you right to there. And it's a beautiful, beautiful vista when you arrive. And you will have an adventure that you will remember when you come and play Tot Hill Farm.
Greg, I got to ask you about differences. I have, as I've talked more about Tot Hill Farm this year, I've had a few people reach out to me on social media and say, hey, you know, I played Tobacco Road. Tot Hill Farm, better or worse, is it the same? Or what's the difference between the two golf courses? How would you sell it to somebody who's been to Tobacco Road but hasn't been to Tot Hill Farm?
Again, a great question. You know, he did Tobacco Road. He finished it in 98. He came straight to Tot Hill Farm, and then he went to did a private course in called Bull's Bay down in the Charleston area. I would say that Tot Hill Farm off the tee, you can see more, and you have a lot more room to hit the ball. You have a lot of room at Tobacco Road. You have more at Tot Hill Farm. And then I think it's very Tobacco Road-like on the second and third shots where – you have to make a choice. Are you going to make the safe play, or are you going to take a chance? And we have a few less blind shots on the approach, but it's like a cross between Bull's Bay and Tobacco Road.
Greg is, it sounds like from talking to Robbie Wooten, your marketing director, and some of the staff there on site, that it sounds like your ownership group may not be done yet with the property, looking for ways to tweak a few things, maybe add some improvements as time goes on and you build up some play back there. Is there anything in your crystal ball that you can share with our audience?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things is we just added GPS and lithium golf carts, and we feel that the GPS is a great way for people to work their way around the golf course, especially the traveling golfer who's only going to see it once or twice. But we also are going to continue to add nuances to it that was original to the golf course, but it's going to be staggered out probably over a 3-5-7 year process in order to take it back eventually the way Mike had it.
Interesting. Well, you know, Greg, I know that you mentioned 5 par 3s, and they're all unique in their own way, but I believe it's the third hole. You get there and you get to meet the rock, there's a few places around that green where it could be the rock. You could find yourself in Alcatraz and try to find a tough way out. But tell us a little bit about that hole. That was one of my favorites on the golf course.
Yeah. It's widely known as one of the most famous holes on the course. But as you arrive to the third tee, there's a giant rock 40 feet in front of you that's hiding the hole from you. And you will not see the hole until you jump out past it to get on the tee box. And once you do, you're going to see about a club and a half drop down to a green that's about 13,000 square feet. It has just a ginormous bunker on the right-hand side and is surrounded by a creek. And between the elevation change and the design that Mike put in place there, it's just a very dramatic golf hole that people really enjoy playing.
Lenny, anything else for Greg Wood, Director of Operations at Todd Hill Farm, just a little northwest of Pinehurst?
Yeah, you know what? I should know this, I guess, but what is the name of the town that you're in there?
Great point. It's Ashboro, North Carolina. Is the location.
Okay.
And it's called, their tag is the heart of North Carolina, which is Randolph County where it's located. And like I said, we're just 50 minutes north of Ashboro. We're about an hour east of Charlotte and about an hour 20 minutes west of Raleigh. So it's literally dead in the middle of the state.
My background in North Carolina, I certainly should have known. I know where Ashboro is, so we're going to find Todd Hill Farms, that's for sure.
Well, we definitely want to make sure that both of you, especially Rory, you got to come back when it's warmer. Come on now. We got to have you come down and play the golf course and experience it.
Yeah, it would be nice to see it when it's warmer than 53 degrees out. But, hey, Greg, correct me if I'm wrong here. Did I see some signs, not for the big jets, but did I see a smaller airport where some private planes could fly in if people wanted to do that?
Yes, and we could come pick you up. I mean, it's less than a tenth of a mile from the golf course is Ashboro Regional Airport. Yes, small jet, single engine, and twin engine can easily accommodate out of Ashboro's airport.
Well, that sounds great. Greg, by the way, the ownership group, I know they have some golf properties in South Carolina as well that you're a part of. Are any of those open to the public where people can join your and see your golf operation in the south part of the Carolinas?
Oh, yes. The links at Steno Ferry. It's just south of Charleston, South Carolina, which is a very, very popular town for tourists right now. We have 3 holes featured along the Intercoastal Waterway, very beautiful golf course. And we also have the plantation course at Edisto Beach, which is about a little over an hour and 20-minute drive from downtown Charleston. It's more of a resort feel. It's about a tenth of a mile from the beach. It features Paspal golf course, and so it's very lush, and people really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun to play.
Well, I'm sure it is. If any of them are even part of what Todd Hill Farm is, I'm sure the golfers will come out there and really have a good time. Well, Greg, you know what? I'm sure Todd Hill Farm will be a happening place this week. There's a lot of people looking for a side trip, side golf away from the crowded Pinehurst area are looking to play. And if somebody still wants to try to make a tee time over there, give us a phone number, a website, some social media, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing to do is go online to TahoeFarmGolf.com, try that, and then that will direct you and give you, and if you want to make a phone call to them, you can get the phone number from there. But start with the website, and then you can then see the golf course with lots of details, and you can also make a tee time.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Greg Wood, thanks for taking a few minutes out of your Saturday morning, and we'll let you gear up for all the golf excitement coming out to the Carolinas this week with the U.S. Open at Pinehurst. And I know that everybody on your team at Todd Hill Farm will be doing their best to keep everybody enjoying that golf course as the week around the U.S. Open progresses. And it was nice seeing you at the PGA Show in Florida, and we'll look forward to talking to you and Robbie Wooten again about the golf properties, Todd Hill Farms, and the other ones you're involved with in the months and years ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me. And yes, we're looking very forward to the Open.
All right. Take care. Greg Wood and Robbie Wooten, you know what? Two guys that really know how to really put out some great golf. And as the saying goes in some of the publications, courses you can play. And they've got public golf. And I'll tell you what, in two states. And, you know, it's been fun trying to enlighten some of the people around Chicago about Mike Strawn's this year. And, you know, Tobacco Road started it for me, and then True Blue in Caledonia, and now Todd Hill Farm. And then I got to see Bulls Bay on the last trip in South Carolina. And I know there's a, you made one of them. There's a couple stops to make up in Virginia. And one of my runs, coming up back to the homestead in Virginia, we're going to have to swing over and see those other courses that Mike did. I'm guessing that because he didn't really do anything around Chicago, the name Mike Strawn's, most golfers here don't know much or anything about him.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. He, his history is interesting. At Royal New Kent in Virginia, the course there, he designed it, and it wasn't too much after that that Mike passed on. And what happened then is that club had membership troubles. They wound up closing for a couple of years, and the members that wanted to keep it going cut the grass to keep it. Did everything to just keep it from deteriorating. And we came back, and when we played it, they recruited us in. They wanted to show us just how much the course had been revived. It was an interesting story. They had a nice clubhouse there. That's where I actually learned more about Mike than any of the others. I mean, he was, of course, I've always loved Caledonia and True Blue. Haven't played Tobacco Road yet. Been by it, but haven't played it. But Royal New Kent, we played with some members there, and wound up sitting down and liking the golf course a lot. But it came in at a time when Mike's name was not out there to speak of. His name became a much more popular name as people. It was a timing thing as people started testing out some of the courses, and the word got out how good they were. So, yeah, I would recommend anybody look for a Mike Strand's name. There are not a whole lot of his courses out there, but all of them that I've played, they've all been really good. And I'm going to find Todd Hill Farms now, that's for sure.
Yeah, I believe the final count was 9 before he passed away. A couple of them are out in the Monterey Peninsula area in California, which might have been his final work. But, you know, it'd be nice if the owners of some of these courses build a little bit of a Mike Strawn's trail, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia. You could just drive through the three states there, and you can get access to 6 of the 7 courses very easily. And, you know, you never know. Maybe at the right time of the year, you could if they're not crowded, they might accept a couple of golfers on non-member outside play, probably for a slightly higher green fee. But Bulls Bay is worth getting on and taking a look at if you get a chance to see that as well, just north of Charleston. Lenny, the U.S. Open is coming up this week at Pinehurst, an exciting time. And I don't know, are you looking at anybody else to win this week that you didn't pick 5-6 months ago for our year-long ING Golf fantasy pool?
Now, I'm doing terrible in that ING pool this year. Had a good year last year, but now I seem to sink every week. But I picked Morikawa in the PGA, and he made a good run at it, but he didn't get it done the last day. But I think this time I'm a little more intrigued by it. I'm going to go with Victor Hovland this time, and he did not have a great. He had a great last year. He did terrific, won FedEx Cup and all. And he had a great last year, but a very slow start, puzzlingly, this year. However, he's been playing good just lately, and of course, right now he's right behind Scheffler at the Memorial. So I kind of like his chances at the U.S. Open. I always thought he was a very great young up and coming player, and he has been. But I think maybe he's a good bet for this week.
Well, Lenny, back in January, I took John Rahm, and this year has not been John Rahm's year. He opened at the LIV tournament with a 3-under par yesterday, and hopefully he heats up a little bit on the weekend. I've been trying to see if there's somebody else with the opportunity to do it all over again. Would I pick somebody else different this week without just saying, well, I'll take Scottie Scheffler? But, you know, the winner this week at Memorial may not have enough left in the tank for U.S. Open week. And, I still think Scotty will play great. He'll be a bone of contention there before it's over. But, you know, Victor Hovland, as you mentioned, could be a good choice. But there's some other guys that have played well this year. And you never know who might adapt to that Pinehurst format and those raised greens. And you try to think back about guys that have almost come from nowhere to win there in the past. Not that Payne Stewart was a surprise, but, Michael Campbell didn't do much after that. Martin Keimer didn't do much after 2014. And so who knows? It'll be interesting to see who can actually come out of there. And foreign players have played very well there. So maybe it's somebody that's going to come over from Europe or Australia and make a dent this week. So I don't know. I'd have to take a look at who's all in the field from that group. But wouldn't surprise me if it was a non-U.S. player that actually wins. Lenny, any other final thoughts before we putt out here and relax for some Memorial Golf and U.S. Open over the next week?
Yeah, I tell you, I just found this out today. This morning, before just getting ready for the show, there was an item on John Rahm in the LIV tournament in Houston that got kicked off yesterday, and there was quite a news clip on Facebook about him taking a shot on a par 3 hole. You're right. This year he hasn't won yet on that tour. He's been consistent but not winning, and he took a swing on a par 3 hole and came out wincing and really in obvious pain. I could find nothing more about it at the time, but that doesn't bode well for him at the U.S. Open, that's for sure. And he's long overdue to win a tournament. Now, you couldn't pick a better one than the U.S. Open for John, but he remains a great player, and I really like him as a competitor. But it's just something to consider as we get ready for Pinehurst.
Okay, real good, Lenny. Well, we're about out of time, and before we sign off today, I want to give a shout-out to Chicago-based golf company Golftini and my friend Susan S., the CEO and designer there. That company is always been about women's apparel, but as Father's Day approaches, check out the new line for men. Yes, Golftini has ventured into men's golf wear, golftiniwear.com. Check it out. So for Len Zeem and myself, and we thank Brian for getting you out to us, and also Andy Michelson and Greg Wood for joining us. Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy the U.S. Open.
The preceding program, Golfers on Golf, was paid for by Rory Spears Sports Communications Limited and guests.